Joining me now on our phone lines, we have Mr. William Prentice, the CEO of Meridian Energy Group, almost like the godfather of ESG in my world, because I'll tell you what, just before we get into the big news about Musket, I got to ask you about a little ESG stuff before I get into the big news, because first of all, how are you doing today?
Oh, very good. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, I joke about, look at us getting right into it here. Joke like you're the godfather of ESG because, you know, I point out to people that we did these weekly updates with the Davis Refinery, first greenfield refinery to be built in the United States in 50 years. And from the crude life's perspective, that's documented history. That is, the minute you turn on the light switch, you're going to be the greenest refinery in the world, and it's right in my backyard, and how can I not cover that story, and yada, yada. And then I talk about how the CEO, William Prentice, his big push was transparency. So we had top engineers on. We had project managers on. He'd come on. We'd have the local people come on. And through the course of this transparency and documentation through the years of, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, we essentially did a weekly ESG report. And so I kind of joke how here at the Crude Life, we've been doing ESG reports since 2015. And so anyway, do you ever look at it like that when you take a step back?
Well, it's funny because ESG has been part of our DNA since day one. You know, I think I've told the story before, but the company was started by a bunch of North Dakota expatriates that wanted to create jobs so that another generation doesn't have to leave the state when they get out of high school and college. So we started with, you know, community involvement being part of our basic business plan. And then as I built this team, my primary source of professionals were guys that had spent their careers primarily with big energy firms who just didn't want to do things that way anymore. And so that's how we got started on this track that we're going to build a refinery. It's going to be the cleanest one in the world. And, you know, actually the execution of that plan was not that difficult because the industry has ignored a lot of technology. Plus, I have to admit that we're cheating by starting with a blank sheet of paper and by using Bakken crude oil, which is, you know, probably the best in the world as far as turning into diesel and gasoline. So, you know, yeah, it's been part of our DNA. It's still there. ESG is something that came along after we got started in terms of such, you know, movements as the Equator Principles and so forth. So we've actually helped innovate into that sector of the capital markets now. And I think as far as a company in the refining space, we are the only pure play in ESG at this point.
I kind of joked that we were even talking about some of these ESG principles before they were even labeled ESG principles. There was a four-letter acronym, too, that started with the letter E as well. So, I mean, there was all kinds of different acronyms being thrown around there for a while. So I just wanted to touch on that real quick because, folks, it's amazing when you start looking at how the bends of pipes and the angles and some of the different, you know, the kite projects and the kite test and to see how high things can go and just the number of steps that are being taken to preserve either the environment or to make sure that there's going to be a positive social impact. But more importantly, too, to make sure that there's transparency throughout the entire process or at least as much as possible. And as we look at, you know, kind of the next step or the big news or some news that came out recently with the Davis Refinery was an agreement with Musket. What's with the agreement with Musket? How's that going to impact the Davis Refinery and what's next with that?
Well, yeah, thank you. You know, in this business, in the energy business, building a successful company is all about who you partner with. And we have a very few key strategic relationships that have been very instrumental in pushing us forward in the right direction and will make our company a great one as we get these refineries into production. A key one here is our offtake agreement with Musket. Musket is the wholesale energy commodity trading arm of the Loves group of companies. I know everybody's seen the Loves truck stops out there along major interstate routes, and they're actually in an expansion mode. Musket provides all of their fuels from the wholesale markets and also provides transport fuels to other retailers as well. They're huge. I think they're the largest diesel wholesale trader in the country, and if not number one, at least number two or three in terms of gasoline. I think they trade about 7 billion gallons per year of refined products. So they are going to be acquiring and marketing out into the retail markets all of the diesel and all of the gasoline from our Davis refinery. That's a 10-year deal with extensions on top of that. And we're also going to probably expand that arrangement to cover our other refineries down the road.
That's incredible. And in fact, Loves, you're right. They are being invested heavily into the new world that we're going into or that we're currently living in. And I say that firsthand. I just got back from Dickinson, just right outside of where the Davis refinery is going to be. We had a check presentation from the Bakken Barbecue, $86,000 we raised this year, $70,000 went to Make-A-Wish, another $17,000 or $16,000 went to the local charities and that sort of thing. And I saw two brand new Loves on the way there, one right outside either Valley City or Jamestown, I can't remember, and then one on the western side of the state. When I'm in Oklahoma, I saw the same thing. I saw the same thing in Wyoming now that I'm talking out loud here. So when I take a look at, you know, the investments into the new world, boy, Loves, they certainly seem to be part of that new world. So with that being said, and if you'd like to comment on that, you can, but I wanted to transition the word new world into COVID and just get an update from you on were there any COVID impacts? Are you looking, you know, around the corner on it now? Just talk to me about COVID and how that's impacted your business in the new world.
Yeah, sure. But just, you know, in terms of the expansion you see in firms like Loves, you know, there's been a lot of talk about oil being in decline and so forth. And apparently the firms that are in that market every day never got the memo. They're expanding. There are 285 million cars out there that run on gasoline and diesel. And somebody's got to provide them, and why not provide them with cleaner fuels from a cleaner refinery? So, you know, that's the thought that goes into that. On COVID, Jason, yeah, it hit us hard. We lost a good year because of the impact of COVID, just not only on slowing down the way people were doing business most of last year, but it changed the capital markets significantly. You know, refined products went through a couple of months of essentially nobody driving, nobody flying. And so through the entire concept of how you would put together a refinery type project, or even a series of them, in a way that would have a securable future, if you will, on the product sales side. So we had to go back and kind of reinvent the wheel. And the result is this agreement with Musket and the way we're going to be doing business by focusing on higher value markets that we can access from North Dakota and at least two other locations in the United States. And I think we've solved that problem, and that's the reason for the announcement. And the capital markets are now coming back from COVID as well. But, you know, the players have all changed. It's a different landscape. A lot of investors that we've been in discussions with for several years are no longer in that market. But there are a lot of other new players who are very interested in what we're doing. But primarily, it turns out, because we're doing it in a way that checks all their boxes on the ESG categories, but is still going to make money for them as we go into the future. So all in all, I would like to have that year back, but I'm much more comfortable with the current landscape that we face and our ability to execute our business plan now that that's all happened. I should also point out that the stress on refined product sales over the COVID period and since, coupled with the stress of trying to, you know, operate aging plants in a more restrictive environmental climate, has led to a number of refinery closures. I think we've lost close to 1 million barrels per year of refinery capacity in the last year or so. And that's capacity that we're ready to pick up and supply that increment of supply with cleaner fuels.
We talked about ESG. That's the buzzword when it comes to the investment world out there. There's been a, you know, obviously I call it the war on big oil. There's been, actually, that's what the governor called it in Colorado a couple of years ago. But there's obviously a push against investments towards fossil fuels and the ESG and et cetera. What are you guys hearing out there? Because there's no lack of demand. There's no lack of demand. I mean, if you strip away, if everybody got rid of their TV and talk radio, boy, there'd be no problems with oil and gas. So... What are you hearing in the financial sectors out there? And I don't know how much you can talk on it, but you know, from the ESG side, or also just, you know, from I guess the energy interest overall.
Well, you know, the energy industry has always had trouble with how to cope with the movements like that. Let's just call it a movement for now. I mean, you know, the post-World War II years were the heyday of the industry worldwide. Then in the United States and Europe, you began to see the concerns about the environment, and the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act were enacted, and that's a good thing, too. And the industry has always struggled with how to cope with all of that. The refinery industry never figured it out. You know, the last full conversion plant in the United States was built back in the 70s. And the industry has just, you know, suffered through the permitting process for making plant modifications and repairs and not wanted to face the prospect of a brand new plant anywhere. So, you know, that's a gap we're rushing to fill in an environment that favors a firm that can do so while checking all of these ESG boxes. And, you know, the things you need to do, there are very specific requirements on how you measure your impact and how you show that you've complied with all of these necessary measures and the need to review and compare, excuse me, and show that you're doing the right things in all of these areas. You know, one of the better guidelines is the Equator Principles, which anybody can look up online. And, you know, we've been put through our paces three or four times now, demonstrating our compliance with all of these. And, you know, we're very proud of that. And the fact that we've done so, you know, head on for several years from inception with complete transparency. I don't think we could have gotten the Davis project permitted had we not done so. It was the right thing to do, and I think even though it took a long time and quite a bit of money, we were able to demonstrate that we were doing things properly and that this is what the next generation of refineries should look like. But yeah, the energy industry, because of the massive investment it requires, there's a tendency to try to avoid changing things too rapidly, you know, as these movements emerge. And I mentioned earlier that we were cheating because we started with a blank sheet of paper and an empty piece of ground. And I freely admit that we don't have any ties to legacy technology or billions of dollars worth of aging assets to protect. So it's somewhat easier for us to go ahead and say, okay, this is the way it's going to be, so this is the way we're going to do it.
Yeah, I can understand that, you know, especially with today's day and age when it comes to innovation. You're right about sometimes when you're, especially in the printing business, I can understand that. You know, a lot of us were trying to figure out what to do with big, expensive printing presses and et cetera. Well, the digital world was coming in. And so that's difficult. And, you know, and that makes it very hard when the government steps in. And I don't want to get too existential or political or philosophical or anything, but I do want to point out, when the government steps in and starts managing the marketplace the way they do, those of us that are building a bigger, better, stronger mousetrap, it almost doesn't matter. You know, I mean, when I started hearing about 10-year contracts with Loves and everything that I know about what the Davis Refinery has been able to accomplish, that's a heck of a mousetrap that you guys have built out there and are starting to, you know, replicate in other areas, or at least look at it, whether it be Kermit, Texas, the Winkler, Walton Refinery. And let's talk about that a little bit, the future of the Davis Refinery, other areas throughout the United States. Are we still looking at other areas? A little quick update on the Davis Refinery too.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with you. It's like a football game where the referee can't keep his hands off the ball. You know, it's very frustrating to people trying to run their plays. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's a free market animal. I'm always frustrated with that, but, you know, it's the system we live in. So we'll now, you know, so as long as we know the rules, we'll play by those rules and we'll compete effectively. As far as, you know, our plans for expanding beyond Davis, now that we've, you know, gotten into the actual construction, you know, we're doing designs, getting ready to issue purchase orders for fabrication and so forth. And there's going to be a press release coming out probably next week on that. We're able to, let's say, 2-3 months down the road, split off a group of guys on the technical side to begin the engineering and so forth needed to prepare for permit applications for the projects in the Permian, West Texas, and also in near Cushing, Oklahoma. The one in the Permian's, we think it's going to be located very close to a town called Kermit, which, interestingly enough, is almost directly south of Belfield, North Dakota, and was named after Teddy Roosevelt's son. So, you know, we retained the Teddy Roosevelt connection on our second project.
You're kidding me.
No.
What a small world. And they got the Red River close by and everything, and just even got that connection. I mean, state-wise. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
it's just really interesting how that works out. But so that's all going to be Permian crude, of course, which is very similar to Bakken crude. The design will be virtually identical. We have a slightly higher sulfur content down there, so that's about the only difference. And also, number three is going to be located fairly close to the big crude collection centers in Cushing, Oklahoma. And there we'll be using a combination of both Bakken crude that comes down from North Dakota and also Permian crude over from Texas. Both those projects will feed a slightly different market. A lot of the diesel from both those plants will be actually going into jet fuel, and there's a growing demand for greener jet fuel, let's say. And as you know, our design in Davis calls for us to utilize about 2,000 barrels per day of vegetable oil in our diesel product. That would be the same for our jet fuel down in the other two plants. We'll be utilizing corn oil, so it'll be a greener, let's just call it greener diesel, because it'll be partially derived from you know, seed oil feedstocks.
Well, let me jump in real quick, because I have in my notes renewable diesel, and I put a question mark by there because I could have swore that I saw an article or I saw the word renewable diesel, and it was related to the Davis Refinery or Meridian. And I just quickly wrote a note down because I don't think I've ever heard that term renewable diesel before. I've heard of biodiesel and clean diesel and that sort of thing. Is that what it is, where you kind of mix a little bit of the corn or soy or something in there?
Actually, you know, it's the way you utilize that term is kind of all over the map. I mean, I know you're familiar with fuel alcohol, you know, ethanol-type plants, mm-hmm. which produce ethanol from the carbohydrate portion of the of corn and so forth. But, you know, what biodiesel does is go directly into a diesel fuel using the oil component of corn, soy, or canola-type oil seeds. And you can have a plant that runs 100% on the corn oil, which would be a pure biodiesel plant. What we do is we utilize the vegetable oil in our diesel or jet fuel hydrotreater so that it utilizes all the excess hydrogen in that process and actually makes our process cleaner, but also produces a, you know, 10-15% biodiesel. And, you know, that kind of gives us the best of both worlds. It's primarily a crude-derived diesel, but it is utilizes a significant amount of the ag product in it, and it helps our process and gives us a very green but reliable fuel. And there are a lot of plants that are planned right now that would be pure biodiesel. Several refineries are being retrofitted to not run on any crude oil at all anymore, just utilizing seed oils.
And so the Davis is going to be doing some renewable diesel?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That's incredible.
No, we've been trying to figure out how to do that. You know, of course, on our gasoline, we'll be blending with ethanol locally. Produced ethanol for the gasoline product, but that's just a pure blending thing. For the diesel, we're actually processing, 2,000 barrels per day on average of seed oils. That'll be either locally produced corn, canola, or soy. And, I mean, that's significant. It's amazing. You know, we're talking about several thousands of acres to produce just what we require. I think for the refineries down in Texas and Oklahoma, we're actually going to increase the proportion of the seed oil component of the jet fuel to try to get it up to more like 15%.
Well, the bigger picture, though, this is a step towards a solution, isn't it? Because there's new regulations coming out next year that's going to impact stripper wells and some of the smaller wells quite a bit. But there's also, obviously, I live on the east side of North Dakota, so we've got primarily agriculture over here. And, you know, that's feedstock and that's diesel and dry. You know, you got to keep the corn dry and all kinds of things, propane extension waivers and et cetera. But what I'm hearing here, if I'm reading you correctly and if I'm the entrepreneur I think I am, there's supposed to be new emission standards coming out and, you know, airplanes and boats and even vehicles to a certain point. This is a step in that direction, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, this is primarily directed at the actual fuel standards. In other words, an extreme example is California, where there are about 77 different grades of gasoline that are mandated to be sold by retail establishments, depending on location in the state and time of year. And that's for it's intended to impact the emissions that cars give off in different areas. You know, some areas are ozone sensitive, so nitrous emissions are a big problem. But I think that's going to get extended into aircraft pretty aggressively. And again, you know, there are ways to manage the actual emissions from aircraft. The industry's done very well for decades on how to get emissions down. But if you also mandate what kind of fuel they use in order to increase the amount of renewables content, then that's something that we also can help out with. It's coming.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see. You know, like I said, it's fun when you can build a good mouse trap and a better mouse trap and a stronger mouse trap. And to me, that's the old school entrepreneur roots. And I understand that we're living in a little bit different of a time right now. And I did want to ask you about, you know, some of the environmental side of things. Have you satisfied enough people on that yet? Or are you still getting, you know, the activists kind of copy and paste and trying to, you know, step in and that sort of thing? Or are people now understanding how science and engineering can solve problems?
Well, I hope that we've won over some of the people that were opposing the project. We sort of spent our time in hell of litigation.
I've never seen anything like it in my 30 years in the media, totally. Honest to God, I've never seen a company get held to the ringer like you guys did. And I mean that as a compliment to you.
it's a system we live in. You know, I mean, that people have a right to go after you if they don't think you're doing the right thing, and it's up to us to prove that we are. And I think we've done that. We don't think that we're off the hook at all. We still have to comply with all of our permits, and we're doing that every day. I think that most of our previous opponents, are keeping a very close eye on us and making sure that we do that. And I'm glad they are. I mean, that's the way the system works. So, yeah, I think we're in a position now where we can execute this project and have a chance to prove that what we've been saying for 8 years is going to happen.
Are you guys still, allowing individuals to read your ESG report? I know for a while there you had an ESG report available on your website and the Go Green Initiative. Is that still something you guys are doing? Is it available for people? I mean, it was a couple of years ago now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I think we sort of put that out there after we went through the gauntlet on ESG with our investment banking firm, Morgan Stanley. I think we're getting that kind of retreaded now that we're going back out into the market. So I think we're getting ready to revise and repost that. That should still be available, but if the old one is still up there, there'll be a new one in the next 30 days.
Oh, no kidding. So you guys, and I am looking at it right now. It is available to download for free at the Meridian Energy Group, Inc.com. You'll have to go to the investor relations resources page, but it is available. But just so you folks know, they're coming out with another one while many people are still trying to figure out their first one.
we're trying to be transparent. In fact, you know, we started out not knowing how not to be transparent, and it's difficult to make a short document that is entirely truthful. So, you know, a lot of wordsmithing goes into that, and we're always hesitant to replace what we got up there already with something that may not be equally perfect as far as having a mistake in it. But yeah, we're getting a new one up there. And of course, anybody has any questions about any of that, you know, I think there's a way to contact us and we'll respond fairly quickly.
We'll make sure we have the links available at the website too. So Any final thoughts as we kind of conclude here, as we kind of wind down the year end, looking for next year? Final thoughts?
No, we're just glad to be moving forward on this. Again, as I mentioned to start with, we've got some excellent strategic partnerships in place now. Some of the announcements have yet to be made, but I'm very happy with the way things are going after a long last, So here we go.